Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so glad to be here again this week and looking so forward to our show. Hope everyone's doing wonderful. And I know we're in the wintertime right now, so I'm getting lots of calls from people on the mainland in Hawaii, you know, rubbing it in. So I won't rub it in. And I also won't complain about being in the nice weather. So I hope all of you are getting a great start off to your new year. And it's coming, we're already at the end of February here, so hope everybody's working on their goals and their plans and what they want to get into, and that life's going the way you want it. Today, we are actually going to talk about the first half. We're going to talk about real estate is the vehicle. I'm going to talk about the joys in our industry. And on the second half, we're going to talk about domestic violence in our homes. It's such a such a dear subject, and such a situation happens many, many times, and nobody even knows what's going on except the victims that are involved inside of the home. Gina Campbell, she's going to be our guest on her second half of our show. She's going to speak out on domestic violence, being a victim of it herself, now advocating against it and helping others. So listen in to find out the warning signs. And if you're a victim, there is help. You don't have to continue living in this situation, and I can imagine it would feel like there is no help, and there is help. So it's going to be a really interesting show today. It's going to So the first half of the show, the reason that we're doing it today on Real Estate's the Vehicle, and I'm talking about the joys in our industry, is a lot of people are going to want to listen to the first half. We're going to be agents and brokers and people thinking about getting into the business. We've been getting a lot of requests from people not in the business asking about the joys, you know, what's the benefits of the business, et cetera, what is it like? I mean, people automatically, you know, think of people buying and selling homes or agents assisting with contracts and homes, but there's just so much more to it than that. And then on the humorous side, a lot of us old-timers, I'm getting people saying, joy, what joy is in this industry? You know, it's sometimes changed drastically. A lot of people want to get out because it's changed so drastically. And it is the type of industry that definitely can wear on you after a while. But it has many, many joys. So we are going to take a real quick break and come right back and dig right in. Welcome back to Realty Universal Radio, and I'm Natalie Mullinex, the host of our show. This is a show about God, life, love, real estate, and making the change that you'd like to see in the world. And it all starts with one person. It all starts with one. Doesn't mean you have to be have every, you know, a whole group of people to make a change. So today our show is about, first half is real estate is the vehicle. We're going to talk about the joys in our industry. A lot of requests have come in, the people curious about this industry and what joys are in it other than what people assume. Second half is we're bringing in a guest, Gina Campbell, and we're going to speak about domestic violence in our homes. She speaks out on it. She's been a victim herself. Now she's advocating against it and helping others. So this is going to be really interesting and heart-wrenching, I'm sure, at the same time. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5428. 347-945-5428. And if email, you can email radio@realityuniversal.com. Many of our listeners are already familiar with our process, and you can email realityuniversal.com. You can go on the website and just email any questions, suggestions, etc. We will definitely get back to you. That's a promise. May take a little bit of time, but we promise to answer everyone. And you can also email radio@realityuniversal.com. So this is focus, you know, most of you listening, but for people that haven't been listening in, if you're new to this show, we always focus on real estate the first half and self-help or something on the second half that's community-wise, inspirational, motivational. There are times that we'll run long on the first half and just go strictly over real estate, but it's always tied into with spiritual and people and changes because, you know, that's what life's really about. No matter what we do, it all integrates with everything, you know, and of course we have to be professional in our business life or our work life, career life, but with that comes friendships and it overlaps and it's your life. So you don't want to segment your life, compartmentalize your life so much that you're like a robot, you know, and you're this way, one way, this way, one way, this way, one way. And we all know, women and men included, what it's like to wear many, many hats as we start having families, raise our children, relationships, et cetera. As we get older, we're constantly putting on more than one hat. So it's important to be able to be happy in all of those situations. So I hear too many people these days saying that they have a job and they go, oh, I can't wait till I retire and then I quit and then we're going to go travel or we're going to do this. I believe you should try to do some of it now and have your mini vacations, even if it's an hour. You can do things that are fun and not look at it that way. So getting back to real estate in our industry, we have so much influence as agents and brokers in the real estate industry. So people that are thinking about getting into it, I'm sure you've researched the pros and cons as far as financially getting in, how long it takes to make money, which if you work hard, you can do it. And when I hear people saying you can't do it, keep a job until you are fully invested in it, I don't totally believe that. It just depends. You have to have money to pay bills. But I think once you can really focus and devote the proper focus, you're going to do well if you like people and you're detailed-oriented. When I say detailed-oriented, I don't mean you have to be like an accountant-oriented detailed, because a lot of the best salespeople are you know, messy in that area. So, but joys, these are the types of the joys that come into this business. We're in a people business, whether you're doing commercial or residential. Now, residential is going to be more, you're going to deal more with people's people and their situations and get to know them more on a personal level than if you're in the commercial industry. Commercial industry, you will get to know the people you're working with and the other brokers, but it's a little bit different. So today we're mainly focusing on residential, but again, everything overlaps. Some of these people you're going to meet, you're going to make lifelong friends. Real estate gives you freedom. You can flex your schedule. You can work when you want, when you don't want to work. You know, you're at the mercy of contracts and situations coming up, though, that are not controllable. So, for example, you have a 9-to-5 job. You say, okay, I'm going to be off at 5. I'll be home by 6. I'm going to cook dinner, do some homework with children. Maybe you're going to get into PTA, or maybe you don't have children, you have pets, or whatever, your own interest. You schedule things. That's, we all schedule everything. In real estate, you really have to learn how to master your time and schedule so that you can fit everything in, because every day, if you're working hard at it and you're prospecting and you're building it up, you're going to have new business come in every day. And everybody has their own schedule and their own times and everything. So you really, really want to learn how to work that part of the business. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel. There's lots of workshops and courses and ways you can learn. We teach in Realty Universal Membership, but there's so many ways you can learn how to delegate and keep control of your time, because if you don't, then you end up stressed because there's just not enough hours in the day to be able to handle it all. So important to learn some of these. You can. There's a lot of basics that you can get in that you're going to, you may say, well, I don't have anybody yet, or I'm just starting. It doesn't matter. I don't have to worry about my time management. Well, yes, now's the best time to start setting it up and creating the life that you want along those ways. So things you have is, there's so many situations are going to come up that you wouldn't, the person may not be buying or selling a home if they didn't know you, if they didn't meet you, if you didn't know it like the back of your hand, or, you know, learn it to where you help people. There's a lot of people that don't think they can ever buy, and they can buy. You know, I've got a story from years ago, with us over 20-some years. A dear friend of mine, John Salany, was vice president of Reisterstown Federal, and before he passed away, it's like 52. Years before that, he referred me to a woman who had four children, all with disabilities. She was single, and she was on social services and disability incomes for her children and welfare, et cetera. I don't know that she would have known that she could possibly buy a house, but John referred her to me, and because he knew she brought in enough income with everything and the disability to be able to buy a place. And she actually, you know, bought a home and was able to own a home instead of renting with her four children. You know, that's just one example. There's so many situations where people don't realize that they can do it, and you're going to be you can be the vehicle and the help for that. Our second half is tying right in with abuse and other situations come up. You are privy. You'll be able to be, sometimes you're in homes, or there's a lot of pluses too. I'm not just discussing negatives, but you're privy to situations that you wouldn't see or hear about because people get close with you. They start telling you things. You're able to help them. You're able to maybe guide them and give them support. Of course, you have to set your boundaries. Otherwise, you would be doing that all day long and not being able to take care of yourself. But there's so many situations and so many joys. You get involved in the community. You can create change. You can get involved in, you know, you're trusted a lot. And that's where, you know, buyers, sellers have to be careful. But nowadays, with the world of the internet, have to be very careful who they let into their homes and make sure the person really is an agent, broker, et cetera. But you, as that agent, broker, you're trusted. You're in with, you know, you have an in that some people wouldn't have. And with that in, you're able to support, you know, when there are issues that aren't good, that like we're going to get into in the second half of the show today. It's very, very rewarding. You can, you know, create things. You can change things around. There's, as long as everything's completely legal, you do go by the book when it comes to contracts. You follow all the regulations. You can create things. You can create fun projects. Get the community involved in things. You can, the people you work with, your clients, your, you know, customers. You can think out of the box. I mean, it's very, very rewarding, you know, because you really are in your own business. Even if you work for, you know, you're going to work for a company when you start out, no matter who you work for, you're always still in your own business. So get creative and you know, enjoy the flexibility. Don't let yourself get pigeonholed when someone tells you it's one way or the highway if you're doing that. Now, it's really good to train with a mentor and learn the ways that really make, really work, that really work very, very well. And in that situation, you don't want to reinvent something that's working, but put your own personality to it. So it's pretty, really very, very rewarding. Stories and stories can come up. It's just not a, you know, I've started in Maryland, and then I wanted to move back to Hawaii, and I go back and forth. And I just can't count how many people I know. You know, of course, you keep your old good friends for years and years, hopefully, and then make new friends. But I can't count the amount of people that I know, and it's I give you thank God for the real estate industry. It's all because of that. And then with the internet, and you know, so there's a lot of joys. There's definitely a lot of hard work. There's there's a lot of give that you may not get back. It all comes back to you in other ways. But you know, it's really good to get to just always put your best foot forward. Try to get along very well and make friends with the other agents and brokers out there as well. You know, it's a very, you'll hear it's a dog-eat-dog industry, and it really is, but don't let yourself be that person. Be the one that shines. Be the one that holds your head high and doesn't get into all the groveling and the patent place and talking and things that go on that aren't beautiful and aren't joys in our industry. And, so it does give you lots and lots of freedom. It's been years ago. Some of my years, probably early 90s, I remember going into a home in Randallstown, Maryland, and the people were totally set on listing their property, and they were going to list it with me that evening. And I always want to find out how we can serve somebody the best, and whether, you know, we're talking to a buyer, talking to a seller, why are you moving? Why are you buying? What are your plans? You know, and I'm not going to, you know, people know what their plans are, but sometimes there's other reasons, and it's really good to know so that you can help them as much as possible. This particular couple, they had three children, and they were ready to sell, but things were tight. Like the only reason they were going to sell is they needed extra room. Their house was getting too small for them. But they had a nice size yard, when I went over things with them and where they were going to buy and what they were going to spend, et cetera, how it was going to work, it was going to be super, super tight and probably stressful. And they didn't say, well, this is going to be stressful, but you could see when you look at the numbers what it's going to be. And I really was listening to all of them and reading, you know, into it, and I basically kind of talked them out of selling their house. Now, you may say, why would you do that? Now, if you want to go make a commission and that was silly, you know, they had a listing, they were going to do it, they were going to buy another house. It didn't matter to me. It was really obvious that it wasn't the highest and best use of them moving forward. And it's not for me to tell somebody if you're going to sell or buy, but this was clearly a situation that when they would add on, they could afford to add on, and it was going to save them a lot of money, and all of their needs were going to be met. So this is just one example of things that happen. You might think, oh, well, you know, they would have figured it out. Well, maybe they would have figured it out, but what if they would have, they were listening, and what if they would have moved forward and later it was going to be a problem? And so they were very happy that, you know, so it's really important to always be very honest and give the best information that you can give. And have fun with it. And you're going to have so many situations come up that are different. And for me, after all the years I've been in, my situation is I can't talk to everybody all the time, all day long, every day, because it would be impossible, because there's only 24 hours in a day and I need to sleep and have a life. But I've been in it a long time, you know. But I still structure it to where I'm able to still be able to communicate with people, whether via email or through assistants or other people, so that things are still working. And I think that's the biggest joy. It's about people. It's about situations. And again, we're trusted, and we get to know things. People open up to us about the problems, about situations, about, you know, lots of times it makes somebody wants to sell and move out of the area, and it makes sense for them to, you know, rent before they sell and then go check out the other areas. There's just a lot of, and you really do, get a lot of joys, and you see it, and you'll see people have children and their children grow up. And it depends if, you know, me, I've been in different communities. So some people stay in one area for their entire lives, and you end up knowing quite a lot of people, and they'll come back over and over and over. We get a lot of repeat business. Doesn't matter, seem to matter where I am, because, you know, with what we do, that people come back over and over, and I believe that's because of the trust that you build, and they know that you wouldn't, they know I wouldn't give them information that I didn't trust or believe, and where none of us are going to know everything all the time, so it's a matter of questioning and knowing where to find that information for people. So all of this has to be done with boundaries, though, because you know, can't wear yourself so thin that you're not taking care of yourself. So it can be done, and it's really wonderful to set that up in the beginning. So it's fun. But there's so many. I could tell you stories after stories after stories. We're already getting ready to go to the second half in a few minutes, so there's not enough time. But you can make a big difference, and you can get into changes. It's fun. I actually never knew that back in '94, when I was going to that we were having a lot of sellers not be able to sell their homes and be able to pay a commission and have us a system, and I started creating menu programs just because I wanted to offer the service, and I didn't think it was right to turn people away, but we also didn't want to throw away our full service business. I never knew back then in '94 that would be the start of creating menu systems and programs that now are today a way of the future. I had no idea. It was just done from my heart for service, for trying to do the right thing and figure out a solution to a problem. You know, let's figure out what's going on here and how do we make this work to help. So you can do, you could just do so many things. A lot of people that get into the business have been in other industries already. I was very 23 when I got in. But a lot of people get in and they've already been fully in careers. A lot of teachers seem to get into this business. You could take your expertise in your other career and what you've done and tie that into something that's going to be very good. So it's definitely stay away from the naysayers in this business. When you get away from the negative talk, and when people are, you know, being negative, just don't believe them. Get positive and set up a plan. So our call-in number, we're just about almost finished the first bit, again, is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428, if you'd like to call in and share your story with us. The biggest thing I guess I can say is your personality, your uniqueness, your drive, your caring does very well in this industry and can give you many, many joyous experiences, you know, overall. And you're able to make an impact. You're able to impact people's lives. You know, they say it's about who you become as you grow and get older. And you're able to really affect change. And that's probably one of the biggest things I like in the industry, and try to help people on more of a spiritual level, self-help level, not just helping them buy and sell a house. That's super important because people need to live somewhere, they need to feel home in their home, and so it's super important, but there's just so more that goes into that home or what they're buying, or if they're buying for a business, or there's so much more that goes into the character of that and the spirit and soul of that, right, and our own, than just here's a house and they buy this here, so it's and now with the internet, so many people are involved themselves, so they've already gotten a lot of the legwork out of the way before you're even, you know, actually handling the system for them or dealing with them. But plenty of joys if you love the business. It definitely works. So that is pretty much our first half. I could go on and on and on, but there's one quick story I'll tell you is somebody was putting ads in the Owings Mills Times. This is years ago. I think it was the Flyer and then the Times, because they bought out the Flyer. Yeah, it was the Times then. And that I had to check something with the back end of their company because it was past the deadline on something. I had to check something on an ad real fast. And one of our listings was we used to do full page ads. And I got to speak to a woman on the back end who is wonderful. I think she's – and in the back end, I was able to get there and say, hey, can you change this and this and this? And she saw this one of the homes on the paper, and she said, wait, this isn't these houses. They weren't even looking for a house. They weren't even – and she didn't know if they could buy or anything. And immediately we started talking, and her husband had VA eligibility, and I started talking and qualifying, going through things with her, and turns out, and the house the house needed a roof too. So a lot of people think with VA that's not going to work. But I didn't think like that. I always thought out of the box because of, you know, figuring it out. And long story short, they bought that house. And it did need a roof. And the roof got put on prior to closing once the loan was approved. And the buyers worked through all that too. And they bought that house. And that is a specific example where they were not house hunting. They were not out there looking. They were just, I mean, not that they wouldn't be buying later, but they were not on a mission to buy a house. And just that one phone call made that difference. So you'll see things that happen like that all the time when you're caring, trying to dig in and make it work. And so we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to go over to our second half and introduce our wonderful guest. I will be right back.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you. After consulting with the experts, we set you up to win.
We are back to Realty Universal Radio, and this is Natalie Mullinex, and we're just getting ready to start our second half, and I'm so excited. If you'd like to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428. First half, we talked about real estate as the vehicle, about the joys in our industry, and it leads us very well into our second half because, as I was mentioning on the first half, we get to get into people's homes, we meet people, we become lifelong friends with people, and sometimes we're able to see things and help in other ways that we may not have if we were not invited and trusted in their lives the way that we can be. Our second half, as I mentioned, is about domestic violence in our homes. Gina Campbell speaks out on domestic violence. Being a victim of it herself, she's now advocating against it and helping others. We're going to talk about some of the warning signs, and if you're a victim, there is help. This is definitely a heartwarming subject and going on way more than most of us even know. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome Gina Campbell. Hey, how are you?
Hi, everybody. How you doing? Ms. Mullinex, how you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. And I thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story and talking with me on the show. I know this is going to help a lot of people.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's definitely an issue. And you've your story is that you've got an amazing story and to tell, and you've taken the bull by the horn and made the changes. And I know a lot of people, when they're in a domestic violence, they're afraid to do afraid to do that, right?
Right.
So why don't we just start off, Gina, if you could tell us your story. Tell us what happened to you.
Okay. I'm originally from New Jersey, and I came down to Maryland. I got pregnant when I was real young, about 17, and came down here, reunited with my daughter's father, and I left my father, you know, because, you know, he was doing what he could do, but I wanted to be with my children's father. And he, like, I had nobody to talk to, because first it started out with the arguments and him trying to control me, like the clothes that I was wearing, and then he didn't want me to go certain places. And like I said, I had nobody to talk to, and he was providing for me, you know, at the time, buying me stuff. And then after I had my daughter, he came very possessive, you know, got my shape back, and I noticed that he didn't want me going certain places. And then he started hitting on me. At first started, he slapped me in my face one time. And then, you know, right then, I was, like I said, I was real, real young. But I was like, well, you know, maybe this is just something he's going through. And then next thing you know, he choked me. And I remember, I know after I had my daughter, we got into an argument. And the next thing you know, he was choking me so bad I couldn't breathe. And I was laid out there, passed out for a little bit. And then, you know, I woke up, and he was gone. So I don't know what he thought he did. But then I didn't leave. I didn't leave after that. I still stayed there with him because, like I said, he was financially taking care of me. And I loved him. Well, I thought I loved him, you know, very much. And it just was hard for me to leave. So around Christmas, you know, Christmas Eve came, and he was supposed to go out and made a Christmas because I just had my baby girl. She was like 2 months at the time. And
How old was your son then?
He was – no, I didn't have my son yet. I didn't have my son. It was my daughter at the time, and she was 2 months. That's my oldest daughter. And he was, like I said, he was supposed to left out and got a Christmas for us, and he told me he was going to go out, get Christmas. It was Christmas Eve. And when he didn't get back, it was real, real late. So something told me to put on clothes, and I felt that something wasn't right because it was going on. Now, he done left early that morning, Christmas Eve, and he didn't get back until 11 that night. So I knew something was wrong, and my kid's father had a bad drug addiction that he was in denial. And I have already heard it, but, you know, at the time I was, like, naive. I didn't want to believe what I heard, but I knew that he would leave out one way and come back in the house another way. So I seen it in his eyes, you know, when he came back, and he was very fidgety and stuff like that. And I had my clothes on, so he assumed that I'd been somewhere. When I didn't, just that at this time, I was getting real scared, and I was going to, my dad was living down the street from me, so I was going to pick up and go take my daughter, and we was going to go ahead on and go stay at my dad's house, because when I started to feel unsafe, that's where I would go. Now, it's going on 11 o'clock at night, so I put my daughter in a Snuggie, I put some clothes on, and I sat on the bed for a while. Right then and there, something told me to leave that night, but I did not listen. So when he came in the house, his eyes was big. That mean, you know, he was doing drugs. So that's what I assumed. Plus, he was, like I said, he was real, real fidgety. When he came in the house, he had that look. And then he was like, well, where have you been? You've been somewhere. You've been with a man. And next thing you know, he picked up some scissors, and he was on top of me, stabbing me.
Oh, my God.
And he stabbed me 25 times.
Oh, my God.
And what saved me was a truck driver that lived upstairs from me, and he just so happened to have been home around the holidays. And he's the person that saved my life because he called the ambulance.
He heard
because by the time the ambulance, yeah, and then he didn't hear no more, and then you heard my daughter screaming and hollering. And at the time, like I said, I felt the blood, you know, rushing out of me. And I, at the time, I was just trying to get to my daughter because thought that this was going to be my last time. And as long as I had the strength to reach over there to where she was at, because I knew it was, like, time to say goodbye. So I remembered a prayer, you know. And I remember, because I just knew that I was going to leave this earth. So I remember saying, God, forgive me for all my sins. And then it just got real, real dark. And I stopped breathing. But I heard an ambulance or police officer come there. And he was like, well, what is your name? And
did
I was
he,
trying
did
to tell him what my name was.
Your son's, your girl daughter's father left, and he ran out and left
you
like
that,
right?
Yeah, he left me. He left me. Like, I just remember him on top of me just, like, stabbing me with the scissors. And I was on top, when he was on top of me, I remember looking at him, and it was just so scary that I couldn't believe that this man that I love and you're supposed to love me is really trying to take me out of here.
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe, like, I just knew that it was the end of everything. Like, it was going to be no more. Like,
you felt like your whole life was going by you like that.
Yes. That whole story where your life flashes before you, that is true. That is true. The whole light thing that you see the light, that is true.
You actually
like
saw
I
the
said,
light
I was,
too?
Yes. You see the light and you try to follow it. You try to follow this big light and it just feels like your body is just lifted up and is going towards this light. That all of that is true. But
you might have died a little bit then. Maybe your heart stopped and you actually died, huh?
I heard so many stories. Like I said, fortunately, when I got to the hospital, I have heard so many stories. And the only thing I know that when I woke up, I felt the doctors, like, stapling me up, like my wounds and stuff like that. And I heard my mom at the time telling me that she was right here. But when I woke up, I was still out of it because I didn't know who my daughter was. It took a couple of days for me to know who my daughter and my family that was right there in my face in the room. So it took 3 days or a couple of days to process who I was.
Because
first woke up, I guess due to the medicine that I was on or something, but I know all these people was in my room. And at the time, I couldn't write. I mean, at the time, I couldn't speak. I had tubes in me. That's what I remember. I had tubes in me. I had to write. So I remember trying to write, who are y'all? And it was like around Christmas. That's what I remember. It was around Christmas. And but then after a while, they was bringing my daughter to me, and my process, I started to regain my remembering. And then, you know, my dad and all everybody started coming up to the hospital. So slowly but surely, I started figuring out. And then I was in the hospital for a while and went to therapy. And
did he get arrested?
Yep. No, unfortunately, he didn't. Like I said, I loved him so much that when the police
even after that, I didn't.
And I tried to stay away. My family tried to keep me away, but months later, he came back into my life. He came back into my life, and I was afraid of him. But at the time, I loved him so much that I was like, I blamed myself for all the things. Now I'm a different person today. I'm totally a different person. Like, you got one time to even dare, like, you're going to put your hands on me, and I'm gone.
You still loved him, and you thought you blamed yourself that he was out doing drugs, high, and out somewhere else all day on Christmas Day.
Yes.
And so you kind of, you know, we're really good about being guilty people and things, right, when we're abused? The guilt.
Right.
I mean, they say with guilt, that happens a lot. I mean, if people, I guess, start to, and you weren't at fault at all. So, oh my gosh, he almost killed you, literally killed you.
But he manipulated me so bad that I started to develop a low self-esteem. One thing about abusive women, or when they've been through abuse, you gather, like, this low self-esteem. You could be probably the prettiest thing in the world or the gorgeous thing in the world. And at the time, I had a low self-esteem. I thought that, like, he made me believe that he was the only person that loved me, that if I leave him, nobody's going to love me. Nobody's going to treat me better. And in my mind, I really thought that all the things that he was saying, because I thought, like, he actually made me think, like, I'm the only person he's doing this because he loved me so much. Because, I felt like I never had nobody that really, really, truly loved me the way he did. Because, like I said, he was a totally different person when I got involved with him. So all the time, all the abuse that I was putting up with him is because I thought that he was going to go back to being the charming guy that he was, the loving person, the protective person, you know, the provider, you know, even after the abuse. And I made excuses for when he blacked my eye, and I made excuses for, you know, I remember telling my dad one time he wanted to know what happened to my face, and I made, like, I fell. And I was always making excuses for marks on me. And every time, I noticed every time he targeted, it was always to abuse my face. It was always to put bruises on my face.
So
every
you wouldn't
time,
go
like,
anywhere.
Yes. Or it was always to mess up.
Oh, my God. Well, now, when he stabbed you and almost killed you, how many months later did you go back? Did you finally let him back in your life?
No, he showed up. What happened, I was staying back with my dad. And my dad was a truck driver at the time, so he barely came home. And my stepmom went back to work because she was at the house, you know, helping me take care of my daughter. But then she went back to work, so I thought that I was fine because he stayed away for a certain amount of months, like about 4 or 5 months.
Right.
He wouldn't come
okay.
near me because I'm not for sure if he knew that at the time, if I had the police looking for him, because he totally went on the run. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
But then
yeah.
I had to walk to the store with my daughter, and I don't know if he was watching or what, but he showed up to the store that I was at, and I remember him saying, I'm not going to hurt you no more. Just come with me. I'm not going to hurt you no more. So that's how he was able to get me where he was at, and he was saying that he missed me and my daughter, and he was so sorry, and, you know, he even had roses. And best believe, I was still afraid of him. Even when he took me to over his family's house, I was really, really frightened. But it's like to him, he didn't do nothing wrong. So he was like holding my daughter and crying at the same time that he would never do this. And then I gave in again. But
so
one
you went
time
back
he
and started living with him again?
Yes, yes. And like I said, in that period of time that I went back to him, he was playing Mr. Nice Guy, and I was still flinching. Like, every time he came near me or I could sleep with my one eye open and one eye closed, I was still afraid of him. But one time we got into an argument because my daughter woke up crying or something and I didn't get her fast enough. And he punched me in my face so bad that I had to go to the hospital because it split the side of my face.
So after that, I went
to crisis. That's when enough was enough. I went to the hospital, and I went to a crisis had to come. But because I was only 17, they couldn't put me in a shelter. So what happened was I didn't want to go back to my dad's house because I told him that he's going to find me there. So I remember them taking me to the Greyhound, which was called Trailways at the time, and they put me on a bus, and that's how I went back to New Jersey. That's how I wound up going back to New Jersey. And I had to ride back to New Jersey with a patch on the side of my eye with a baby at the time. And I think my daughter was like 5 or 6 months at the time.
So you had two babies then or just one? Just one?
No, just one at a time. This is all still my daughter.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then, so did you go back with them? Okay, so you went back after the stabbing, and then you went back again, and then he punched you again. He did it again. And then after that, did you go back, or did you finally stay away from him?
No, I stayed in New Jersey for about a year with my grandma, and then I got a call from him. Because I was in New Jersey, I started going back to school and stuff like that. And actually, I met a friend. I had another friend that was real nice to me at the time. And everything was going so good. And then I got a call like a year later, and it was him. Apologizing and stuff like that, and I just was a sucker at the time. Like I just he can manipulate me, and next thing you know, I got into an argument with my grandma, and then next thing you know, I was on a Greyhound coming right back up here.
And then
when I got up here, I seen him. Then he played the nice guy again. And, we went back to fighting again. And then after I had enough again. No, he wound up getting locked up. Okay, he got locked up. That's what he got locked up for. So in the midst of him getting locked up, I couldn't stay down here because I had nobody, you know, no financial, nobody to take care of me. So
right.
I had to go back to New Jersey and stay with my grandma. And then from my grandma, I got tired of my grandma's, and me and my daughter, I got my income tax check, and I just remember me and my daughter going to North Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah, me and my daughter, we was in North Carolina, you know, and, you know, things just started working out for me, and I think I was down there for a good 6 months, and then, you know, got down there and got kind of lonely, and he came home. I found out he came home, and then I let him come to North Carolina, come visit me and my daughter. He wound up staying, And then he was doing good. He got him a job, and, you know, we was doing good. And then he let his mom down there. And it just was just repeated up until he caught his last. When he went to prison for good. When he went to prison for good back in 2000, it was my last time seeing him. And that's when he caught the 9 years. And from them 9 years, that's when I, you know, I moved on. I got married. And my life started to change. Then he came home for 2 years back in 2006. Well, I was done with
you,
him.
Or he came home? You were already married to someone else.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, okay. I had already moved on. So he came home in 2006 from the 9 years when he was arrested. He came home and he got involved with some girl, and he wound up, the 2 years he was home, he wound up stabbing her. So now that's why he's doing 35 years.
Is she dead?
To be truthful, no, she's not. This is my son's, my two children's younger sister, mother, and he wound up stabbing her. But he didn't get her as bad, but he still did it. And
oh,
I blamed myself for that. I blamed myself, and I'll never forget the night I got the call and he came on TV, and I blamed myself because I thought that because I let him get away with this, he was able to come home and do it to somebody else. And,
it wasn't your fault, but
then,
I understand the feeling that you'd have. Yeah, I can but it wasn't your fault. He clearly needs help, and he doesn't look like he's going to. He's definitely a major abuser, huh? Major.
Right, but we don't have to worry about it no more because he's doing 35 years, and then after he do the 35 years, he still have to do the backup time for violating his probation. So I don't have, like, you know, like, as far as I tried to let him deal with his children. But my kids are much older now. And I have an 18-year-old and I have a 16-year-old. And my daughter just said something to me the other day, and she wanted to write him, and she wanted to let him know that, you know, a lot of stuff had to come out. And she wanted to tell him, because what you've done to my mom, I almost didn't have a mom and I almost didn't have a brother. So I have to help her, because now she's at the age where she can speak her mind herself.
Right, right.
So after all of that, you still cause some turmoil to where me and my children, we still have to get therapy from that. I still have to look at the scars on my body. But in the same time, I could tell somebody what happened to me, and if they're in an abusive situation, the best bet is to get out, because once a man start putting his hands, any abusive, once an abuser start putting his hands on you, it's not going to stop. Mainly if he has an anger problem. It's probably something going on that happened in his childhood. It's probably something, the drugs or whatever. But if he started, it's never going to stop. It's never going to stop. And they say now the worst abuse is mental abuse now. So.
Because no one sees the sign and sees the scars on your body, so they get away with it longer, right?
Exactly, exactly. But and I want to say to any women out there, you know, you're not weak. You're not weak. You know, a lot of men will make you feel like you're weak, or it's something about you, and it's like they feed off of it, and they make you feel low. But if you can ever, and if you got children, just for yourself, if you got children for yourself, you got to get out them situations, mainly for your children. And I believe that everything that I went through made me the stronger person to why I don't put up with none of that stuff now, to why I speak up now.
And, you know, you speaking up, though, and then you didn't die after 21. I mean, it's amazing. I think God had a plan for you, and I think you speaking up can really help a lot of women, because you know firsthand what it feels like. And
I just,
because what you were saying about they make you feel less than or make you feel bad, and I think that's one of the abuser's signs, right? They start picking and picking to try to turn it on you, give you low self-esteem. And it's really them who has low self-esteem, and it's them who tries to hold on to you that way because of their fears, right?
Right, right.
It's so sad.
It's
and, you know, they have women that abuse men now. You hear about stories like that, which, you know, you always think,
exactly.
and I just think, Oh, it's. I think it's horrible. I think a man that abuses a woman has no backbone, and a woman that abuses a man. And I think what you're saying for our listeners, it's so important, I think, to hear that it's not going to change, because you only went back because you thought he loves me, and it's going to change, right? That you
right.
believed you believed him that he wasn't going to do it again, right?
Right. And then I had a lot of daddy-daughter issues, and he also fed off of that. See, one thing I noticed about him, that as long as he knew I had nobody, because at the time when I got pregnant, I was real young. So my family back home in New Jersey was already upset with me. And they
sure.
felt like I made the biggest mistake in the world. My dad was the only one, and me and my dad didn't always have a relationship because he was always on the road or he was always gone. Or, you know, just so
right.
as long as this person knew I had nobody to go to and that he was my everything, he really took advantage of that. I had no friends because I didn't know nobody down here in Maryland. I mean, and I had, every time you turn around, my stepsisters and them was doing this, like doing that to me. And then they knew that he was mean and abusive. So, and we grew up, you know, them couldn't stand me. So they would tell him little things, you know, and I wouldn't even leave out the house, Miss Nally. Like, I didn't want to go out the house because I didn't want to be accused of nothing. Even when he would go out on his drugs or his little binges, it's times that I was pregnant. And I used to go looking all over for him just so he could come back home, you know.
Oh,
and he'd come back home and accuse me of a sock that he had on the ground, you know, that he left on the
right.
ground, talking about it's somebody else's sock. And I used to be, and I'd never been through this before, so this was my first experience. I didn't know what it was like to experience a guy on drugs, you know, because
yeah.
when I was younger, I didn't deal with nobody that was on drugs. He was the first person, even, I couldn't even accept it when I first found out the facts that he was doing drugs. See, he made me believe that, oh, it's not me. It's not me. They're lying on me. They're lying. And I was thinking to myself,
right,
like,
and you believed him. Well, you know,
right.
I think when you're getting emotional and you're with them and you're sleeping with them and you're with them, whether you're getting married or you're not getting married, all of those you're picking, you know, all of those vibes and the emotions just take over too. And it's I've heard many cases. You know, I ended up, well, I went back with my, well, I was married, well, I was went back a second time, and then I wasn't hit before at all. But then before I got divorced, I did get my. He broke my nose. My ex, he broke my nose, kicking me on the ground, and I'm lucky I was alive. And I immediately split up and was getting divorced. I wanted nothing more to do with
right.
him. But it was right before Christmas, and I remember still staying with him through Christmas because I didn't want my son to not have a Christmas. Right? You know how you
right.
You kind of put up. Yeah, and you put up with things, and you kind of go well, and then maybe okay, it was only one time, maybe, but thank God. Other things happened and I didn't stay, you know, but I could have easily been
right.
bamboozled, you know, what do you call it, you know, I could have been easily fed a bunch of lies and maybe said, okay, I'll give you one more chance, right? I can see
right.
people doing that, you know, and oh my gosh, I'm so thankful and glad you're alive today. Tell us some of the warning signs, like, because people that are listening are going to listen later too. We have a lot of archive listeners. They're in the situation, I mean, what are some of the warning signs? The controlling, you had mentioned about dress earlier. Any patterns that they should look for and say, this is
yes.
really dangerous?
Right. I know now a red flag to me is a person, like a man, you know, jumping up in my face. That's a red flag to me because, I mean, I understand people are going to argue and they're going to shout out each other. But if a man knows that you're going to flinch from him, he automatically knows that you're scared of him. See, most men, you have some that don't want you to be scared of them. I'm not going to put, just because something happened to me with one person, I'm not going to put all of them in a category. You know what
right.
I mean? Because I have had
right.
good guys. But if a man is jumping up in your face and he tries to back you down for speaking whatever is on your mind, that's a sign right there because most men don't never want a woman to speak what's on her mind. They always want to close you up or put you in a corner. So if they got a thing where though they jumping up in your face to keep you from talking and, you know, to keep you from saying stuff, that is a sign. That is a sign because if he's angry, you don't know what he would do within the seconds that he is angry. The next thing you know, he lashes out at you. So I do know, and like I said, as far as with the clothes, another person should never tell another person what they should put on. You know,
change their hair, change their style, right?
Because that means you don't want me to feel beautiful about myself. Like, if I love you, why do you care if another man is looking? Why do you care? Because I love you. You know, I'm giving you the security, you know what I mean? And I'm clarifying that I love you, the confirmation that I love you. So why do you care? Like, as long as I'm not out there looking like a two-bit prostitute, why do you care?
Well, like, it's not like you're saying, hey, honey, how does this look? Does this look good on me? You're saying, he's actually saying, don't wear that. I don't want you wearing that. You know, it's different. It's not,
right.
not good.
Or anything that'll draw attention. Some men are, like, intimidated of anything that might draw attention to whoever they want. And, you know, you got some guys, they're just looking out for your benefit. Like, maybe you shouldn't wear that. You're going to get the wrong sign. That's different.
Right.
But a guy telling you what to put on and what not to put on, and you should change your hair, you shouldn't wear that lipstick or this, that, and the other. If they're afraid that somebody else, or if they're real, real jealous. It's a difference being concerned, and it's a difference being real, real jealous. The real jealous ones, you have to watch. See, where we fall at, we think that it's cute, or he really loves us, or he's really showing us attention. No, that's not. If they're real, real jealous, where they don't want you going nowhere without them, and they got to be at all the places, and that means either they don't trust you or they think that you're going to go do something.
You know, and a lot of times it seems like it's because the other person's doing something wrong that they don't trust someone else. It's usually the case. And you know, I know when my – yeah, that's really bad.
That is right.
I remember with mine when I got my nose broken, I had just – my dad had died, and I didn't want to go anywhere, do anything. And 7 weeks later, we all went to a bull roast that an ex-father-in-law had invited and gotten tickets. And so I was feeling more, you know, I got to dance a little and with that, you know, talked to everybody because I had been so upset about my dad, you know, before. And it felt good to feel like a person, to get out a little bit, you know. And on the way back, I remember it was an ex-husband. I don't even like to call him an ex-husband anymore. Isn't that terrible to say that? Because it's been 20-some years.
But that's true.
I mean,
true.
He was, but it was so disgusting to me. And he started pounding on me in the truck, and I couldn't get out. We're driving down the road. So I got out. As soon as I got out at the house, then he started kicking me and broke my nose, so it was pretty bad. But that was the last, you know, the only time that it, because I wasn't going to deal with another time other than. But I can, it's. But those signs were there. You're very jealous, very afraid, wondering where I would, you know, why.
Very,
you know,
controlling.
Didn't like me dancing with. I was dancing with the relatives, not some strange, you know. And yeah, very, very scary, very controlling. And but I didn't get any apologies. There weren't any apologies. He didn't apologize at all.
No, you're not. You know, me and my daughter just had that conversation. My 18-year-old daughter. We just had that conversation last night. And my daughter, like I said, my daughter wants to write him a letter, and so she wants me to help her. And she wants to speak her mind, speak her peace now, because, like I said, he calls from the prison, and he even got upset because my children don't want to visit him in jail. They feel like you put yourself, not only did you do this once, but you put yourself in there. And then it was times we did go visit him, but I was hoping that so he could talk to my son, so he could let my son know that this is not a place that you want to come to. You know, because at one point in time, my son was like almost headed in the same direction where he was getting in trouble and stuff like that. So it was scaring me, you know, as a mother. I don't want him there. Yeah. That's why I'm doing everything I can so he could see a different route of life. But anyway, we would get down to the jail, and, like, this guy would come out, like, laughing and stuff. So my daughter, it concerned my daughter, like, you're here. And then my daughter was like, well, I don't want to go visit him no more. You know what I mean? And then he wanted to get mad at my daughter. So my daughter was like, you made a mistake, not once, twice.
Maybe your daughter could talk to a counselor. It might be a good idea to write the letter and don't mail it, and then maybe mail it later when she's ready. Because sometimes I'm not saying she shouldn't write it. I'm just a suggestion. She may want to talk to a counselor about it before she just gives it to him. You know how sometimes they suggest, like, when you're really angry with somebody or upset with them, maybe write a letter first, but don't mail it until you've had time to really think about it. You know, that type of thing. And
right.
It's how long is he eligible for parole?
I do believe that with this go around, and because this is his second time doing this, And his rap sheet, the judge that put him away, like he's trying to get a pretrial or something. And the judge keep denying it because he has to go up before the same judge. And he keeps trying to get some kind of pretrial, or he don't feel like the judge gave him too much time or some unfairness. I don't know how that law stuff go. You know, I never been in jail, thank God. So I don't really know what he's trying to do. But anyway, the judge keeps telling him, well, even if you, you know, do half of that, you still going to have to do where you violated your probation. You had 10 years backed up behind that. Then he called a reckless endangerment, you know, because it was children around. So the judge feel like you're a menace to society. Not only have you did this once, but you got a rap sheet of beating on women, beating them, because even the 2 years that he came home, come to find out he was beating on this girl before he did what he did. And the sad part is that I knew this was going to happen because I knew a friend that knew her that was working with her, and not that I was trying to put this, you know, on her, you know, but I was like, oh, my God, he done came home, and I didn't already hear, because, see, I kept my distance from him when he came home. I wanted no parts of him. And like I said, I would hear through hearsay how he was beating on her. He beat her so bad she had to go to Johns Hopkins Hospital. So after that, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to do to this girl what he do to me. And sure enough, when I woke up that morning to get ready to go to work, I was looking at the news, which I rarely do. I do not like watching the news. But so happened that I was looking at the news that morning, and there his face came up where they was looking for him. And it took them 2 weeks to find him.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
So what the 2 weeks that they was looking for him, I'm locking my doors because I know what type of animal this is. Like, he's out for everybody, you know. So how did I know that he's not going to come and finish me off? So, you know, I was scared to leave out my house.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
And I had no parts with him the 2 years that he'd been home. But that's where my mind was at because I knew what type of monster he was years ago. So when he did what he did to her, you know, and I had to make it down there to that hospital just so I could speak to her or leave her a card to let her know how sorry I was. But at the time, she couldn't get no visitors but her family. And at the time, I wasn't her family, so I left her a card, you know, letting her know that I was sorry. Because, like I said, at the time, I felt like I created that monster. Because
and
I
you
had
did,
him,
you didn't. You really did. I think they're so good
at
making
you
think
that.
Yeah,
but at the time I did. Yeah.
No, I can understand, y'all. Oh, my gosh. So the warning sign. So basically, I mean, did he ever go to counseling with you? Did you guys ever go to counseling together?
No. No. No counseling. As far as when he did the 9 years, the letters that I got, he's never once apologized. I don't even think he ever apologized. And you know what? Now I don't even look for an apology from him. I don't look for an apology at all, because if it's not going to be ever be sincerely, like the one time I got an apology from him, that's because he was trying to keep me around and he was trying to make it seem like he changed and he was so sorry. But that flew out the window after he went back to putting his hands on me again.
Yeah, that's I tell you, it's really gut-wrenching because, I mean, you could have been dead, and I think a lot of people do end up dead, women and men, from this abuse that's not going to change. And so what do you recommend? I mean, for somebody, say they, like, for example, with your daughter, I can understand, you know, he left and here you are stabbed to death with a baby and he didn't know that anyone heard or was going to be coming, you know, he just did it, right? He didn't care.
I believe he was trying to, I know, he did not care. He has no remorse. He's the type of person, he has no remorse. And it's saddening to me that a lot of people wonder why, like, I be so concerned about people that has no remorse, like, they don't care what they do. And I'm always
like they don't have a conscience?
Wanting to know why. Yeah, like, they have no conscience. Like, you can hurt a person and it just don't affect them. And it's a shame that people, but anyway, like I said, I also have a son by him, too. So in the midst of the time that I went back to him, somehow I had a
Wait
son
a minute.
By him, too.
You went back, okay,
yeah.
So you went back the second, that you went back another time.
No, after the second time, that's where my son was made. After the second time when I came back from New Jersey, my son was made. So I do have I do have a son by him. I have the two kids. Now, the thing with that, I was trying to teach my children as they was growing up. I never told them the truth of what happened to me. Like, they always heard from a family member, how I've been stabbed up, and it was their father. I remember at one time I used to lie to my children. And even though my son was so smart at him being 4 or 5 years old, he used to want to know what was going on with me. And, Mommy, why you have those scars? And I remember I used to lie to him, and I used to tell him that I was hit by a car. And I never forget one time, my son, he was like 4 years old, and I never forget my son looked at me, and he was like, Mom, you're lying. He said, I know my dad stabbed you. And, like, I was so completely shocked. You know, because, like I said, this is a child growing up, so you got to be very, very careful what you say to a child. And I remember my son had so much anger at 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 that his animosity was towards his father. Like, he always, as a child, you know, he used to be like, I hate him, or I'm going to hurt him. And I used to try to teach him, no, because, like I said, my mom used to try to teach us that no matter what a person do to you, you can't hate a person, you know. And I hate to say that these days and times, you know, you can't hate a person, but you can't forgive a person neither, you know.
Like, no, but
I mean, you can't
what
forget.
You
can forgive, but you can't forget.
Right, you can forgive, but you can't forget, and you need to stay away from them. What about, what if there's a woman right now or a man right now that they're living in a situation, and they say the man's telling the woman, you leave here and I'll kill you, you know, and they're afraid to leave. How do they get help? I mean, would you recommend they just call the toll-free numbers? I mean, would you recommend?
If he's around, if the abuser's around, no. They're going to have to wait. The first time that abuser leaves, that is your time to get somewhere. If you got to get to a neighbor's house, I remember times I had to run to a neighbor's house. If you got to get to a safe place, just to call that number, and a police will come out, and they will take you somewhere where you're safe.
So just call 911?
Yeah, call 911, or it should be 1-800 numbers. They're called crisis. Like down here, they're called life crisis, and the numbers are most likely in the hospital or, you know, at a police station. But it's best bet to just call up, get to a safe place, a neighbor's house or somewhere. Like, soon as he leaves and you think he's going to be gone for at least 30 or 40 minutes, that is enough time to run to a safe place. Once they leave that house, that car is out the garage or off the street, that is your time to get out. Do not think back that maybe he'll make things right, or if I say this or if I say that. If they're putting their hands on you, it's not going to stop. It is not going to stop. It's going to get worser, and it may even cause you your life. So,
and your children's lives too, right? Because some of these people, you never know what someone can do. You know, you
some
hear these
abusers,
stories where
they
someone...
know you're not going to leave. Like some
well,
abusers,
you hear these
I didn't
stories.
Want to cut you off, Miss Natalie. If they
no,
know
no,
that you're
fine.
Not going to leave, and they know that you're scared, and if they allow, once they felt like they put their hands on you and they got away with it, like even once or twice, it's not going to stop. It's not, because it's like a control thing where as though they want you to be fear. Every abuser wants you to at least be fear.
It's like they want to control
and
you and
have
own
a
you.
Friend, I'm going to tell you something else. Even if you have a friend, because like I said, I remember, like, people used to, how I got to where I am wanting to be an advocate and wanting to talk to people, because like I said, I didn't used to tell my story. I used to be so ashamed, and I thought, like, I was weak. But a lot of people already knew because I had already made the papers and the newspapers, and everybody knew who he was. So I couldn't hide that. But once I left from this town, and a lot of people didn't know what happened, they used to always ask me, well, what's the scars on you? Why you got to? I used to be so ashamed to tell people what really, really happened to me. But over the years, like I said, God got a way of doing stuff. Over the
God's
years,
amazing.
I had no choice. Yeah, I had no choice because people just started coming to me, like, females was just coming to me crying, and they used to be like, I'm in abuse, what did I do? You got out of your situation, what do I do? And, like, so many people would come to me and want me to, you know, talk to them, and even churches that I've been in, you know, it was my testimony. And so I was like, well, you know, evidently, why, God, why? Why do I have to tell? I lived it, so why? And I was being selfish. But like I said, so many females was coming to me, and they wanted to talk and wanted to know the signs, and they wanted to know this. And, like, the stories that even that I hear now, like, it just, it It bothers me, and you know, I want to hold people, and you know, and I want to. But one thing I do know, that you can't help a person unless they want to get out that situation. You could want a person all you want to find safety, but if they do not want to leave, and it's sad to say, some women will stay, and some women will stay due to financial situations. They'll
right.
stay because they don't have nobody else, or they're embarrassed that the person that so-called loved them is beating on them. A lot of women do not stay, and they feel like they're weak, and oh, my God, it's just so sad. But like I said, if you're in that situation, and as soon as the person leaves in that car or wherever they go and you see that you're safe, and just run to the nearest place and do not look back. Put whatever clothes you got to put on the kids and just go. Go. Sometimes you have to leave your house
here.
And you have to leave your cars and you have to leave whatever, you know, and you have to, sometimes you have to start over. It was times I had to start over from scratch. I had to go into women's shelters with my children.
But your life
you
and your children's
lives. It's better being
are...
safe than sorry. Yes. It's better
yeah,
to
your
be
life
safe
and your...
than sorry.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you went through that, and it's just your lives and your children's lives really depend on it. And I think the biggest thing you're saying too is it's not going to change. They're not going to change. This isn't going to get better. And the person's not healthy. And the person's not, you know, is very dangerous. And
right.
He's got to get out of it. And I think
and
one
you
of
know
the things
he's not going to change if they don't want. I'm going to cut you off again, but I just
no,
had
you're
a
fine.
Thought.
You cut me off.
You know they're not going to change. If you ask them to go to therapy, because most abuse, they don't want their secrets. They don't want their secret out that they're hitting on you. Because some men, you know, if they think about it, some men was brought up that if you put your hands on a woman, you're weak. Where some men in their mind, you know, they probably done seen their mother abused, so they really think it's okay. Some men are very vindictive because how the home that they grew up in. You know, like now I teach my son, and it must be something that follows my son because I taught him as a little boy, if I ever catch you putting your hands on a woman, you don't put your hands on a woman. So it was plenty of times, like I think a girl hit him or something like that, and he told her, "You're lucky my mom teach me not to hit no woman." Because it's something that was embedded in him now. So
that's a good thing.
I always taught my son, you know, I try to reverse whatever you got because men don't, you know, that's how my dad raised, you know. That's why I was
right.
surprised that I put up with it so long, you know, because this is not how I was raised.
No, not at all. That's wow, this has been really enlightening today, and I hope that, and I know you're helping people. Well, tell us, we're just about almost finished and on the show, and just tell us about what you're doing now to advocate. You're actually taking classes and learning how to, deal with, get your word out, actually, to other people, right, so that they can.
Right, okay, how did I get to this point? Like I said, when I got here to where I live at now, I wanted to do something. So I know when I was going to therapy or whatever, because, you know, all of this stuff got to come up. And I said if I ever, you know, get back into the work system, I want to do something to give back. So like I said, I was going through a therapy session myself where all of this from where it rooted from. So mm-hmm. as I was going through this, you know, like I said, I was in life crisis and they – ask you what your goals is, and I remember the lady, I said, this is what I want to do. I said, I want to do what you do, because when I was in the shelter, you know, an advocate, we was doing what my plan is, how I'm going to get out this situation, what my goals going to be to better so I don't get back in this situation. And I said, if I ever, you know, get out the situation that I am and my life start to turn, this is what I wanted to come back around to doing. So,
wow.
That's what I'm, you know, went back to school for. So this is what my next step is going to be.
I love it.
And
I love it. It's just so glad that you're,
help
so glad you're doing that.
People that was in my situation. Because, like I said, the best type of people that can help you is somebody that been there. Like, you know, I've never been, like, out there on drugs, so I can't be a drug advocate. But I've been abused. So I
but
can tell somebody. my story, you know?
But you still could, because you've got, with him being on drugs, you know what it's like and what to look for and what the signs are, and, you know, so you still can, really. But it, I guess, you know, what I'm hearing out of so much of it, and I went through a situation, but I got out of it. I wouldn't put up with it at that time, but you never know. But I did through Christmas, is that people, it's almost like you were drugged, even though you weren't drugged. You weren't drugged with, like, drugs, right, that you ingest into your body.
Right.
But you were drugged by a man who was manipulative, who knew how to control you, who knew how to make you believe he loved you when he doesn't really know what love is. That's not love. And I'm also, you know, you hear a lot of cases where it's the women abusing, too, the men. So it's not always just the men abusing the women. But unfortunately, I think the percentages are higher with the men, and the men are typically stronger. So it's harder to get a man off of you than a man to get a woman away from him, right? You know, type of thing.
Right.
So I think in that sense, it sounds like you kind of were drugged. I mean, because love, those emotions, when we get into codependencies and other issues, and when you're young and, you know, you're thinking this person loves you and you have a child and you're, you know, when we're sleeping, you know, when people are intimate, you know, all these things, it's almost like so people that are in it, I mean, you've lived it, and you can see why somebody would keep going back. Believe the person.
Believe
the person. You know, give me another chance. I'm so sorry. You know, I've heard that before from other women where the boyfriend or husband pleaded and begged, right? And they do it because they love this person. You believe you love the person because you're not somebody like them. You could never control somebody or abuse somebody. And I've learned that in my life. You know, lots of times we go, how did someone do that? Oh, my gosh, I can't understand how they could do that. And, you know, we can't understand how they can do it because we don't think like them.
Right. And if you ever notice, like, when you're not like that, it's always the other person. And so you are, like, really clueless. And people will make you really feel like, well, because, you know, even times what really made me ashamed to tell my story, because people was like, but you went back to him. But how did you go back to him? And how did you go? Well, it came with it. You know, it came with the abuse. It came with me feeling less of a person about myself.
Yeah.
It came with me believing that I couldn't make it without him. You know, like I said, he was the provider, you know. And he was even... you know, had me so screwed up in my head, he didn't even want me to finish up school. Like, it took me to get out of that situation for me to finish up school. Then so many years went by, you know, and then I was taking care of my children and stuff. It took me to become older to start working on my GED. So, like I said, like, but had he would have been the guy that was like, come on, you're going to do this, and I'm going to make sure you finish school, and, you know, and even at one point he was trying to, had me, every time he turned around, he was trying to have me, you know, get me pregnant. So I'd have been walking around with a whole bunch of kids, you know.
Barefoot,
you know.
What do they say, barefoot? Wait, it's a barefoot, no, I'm pregnant
yes,
in the summer and barefoot
and
in the winter, pregnant in the
yes.
summer.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Gosh. It's, you know, the beautiful thing is you're doing awesome, and anybody listening can know that, you know, this too shall end if you go and you call and you get help and you realize, I can't live like this anymore. This isn't good for my children. It's not good for me. And you get help, even though it's painful.
Right.
Like, so many things we go through in our life are so painful at times. But that it will get less painful, and it'll be less, more clear as time goes on. So the time to start is today. And I guess, like you mentioned, it, you have to try make get away from them, right? Probably not a good idea to get them mad and call
and
right on the spot.
And do not wait until you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. Do not wait until you get sick and tired. Do not get to a point that you're sick and tired, and then that's when you want to go. You have to go. You have to, because it's not going to end. It's not going to end. My problem was I was sitting around waiting for him to change into the man that he was. But for real, that was not him in the beginning. That was not him. That was
that Romeo.
The front.
They say that romance thing. They say sometimes it's the first year and a half. It takes about a year and a half, and then they start showing their true colors within about 2 years. That's what I've, you know, or people do when they're changing their side. So it has been an honor and a pleasure to have you on today. Our show's just about finished, so we're going to – I wish we had more time. Maybe we can get you back another time, too. And I'm so happy
you
shared your story with us.
I'm glad.
Oh.
I'm glad.
I'm so glad you shared your story with us today, because people, this is really going to help people, and I'm so glad that you're continuing on to be an advocate for people that just aren't going to see it. You know, it's like having blinders on, right? So somebody needs to help them lift up the blinders, and you're a great person to do that because you've been it. You know exactly what it feels like to have those blinders on, and oh gosh, God bless you. I'm so glad that you are healthy and your children are healthy, and that you've come through it. You've survived.
Yes.
And not everybody does, and it's just it's been an honor to have you on today. So
yes.
Did you want to say any last, because we've got about 1 minute, and then we're going to go ahead and we're going to close out. So if you want to say any last parting shots to the women who, or men, it could be a man too, being abused, but the people that are in that situation and they think there's no way out.
Right. I just want to say, like I said, if you can exit as fast as you can. Do not sit around and wait for change. It's your life before any, because somebody else could take your life quicker than you think. And I just want to end it, and thank you, Ms. Natalie, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, and I really enjoyed this. And I want everybody to have a good day.
You're awesome, and thank you so much. And to everybody out there, oh, I want to mention one quick thing. If you're trying to leave and you're thinking, oh, we've got furniture here, and I've got my clothes, and I've got this, and my kids have their toys, none of that stuff matters, does it? None of it. Just get out.
Right.
Get
none
out,
of it
right?
at all. No, because that furniture is going to be here. You're not.
Exactly.
All right, Ms. Natalie,
exactly.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much. You too. Uh-huh. And thank you very much. And to everyone out there, I wish you peace.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.